When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. He's Anthony Pusick. And EJ Raddick from the NHL Network joins us. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you? A little late night last night?
Well, a little time. Listen, I got no problem with New York. I love New York City, and, you know, whatever. I'm not going to get political with Mayor Adams, but I just don't want to know that, like, the one negative about playoff hockey is that you get these late nights and you got to leave the city, and that's when they decide to close everything. So I was on the air until midnight, and I got home at like 2:15 because sat in traffic for an hour trying to get through the Lincoln Tunnel. But hey, listen, that's first world problems, EJ.
I will say this. I think that's one of those things that goes across party lines, because that's been going on for years.
Right, no matter who's in office. Right.
And it's very frustrating when you're like, I would imagine just for everybody, not just those of us working late in the sports business, but I'm sure there are people who put in long, hard days of work, of manual labor, and want to get through that tunnel late at night at like 12:30 or 1 in the morning,
yeah,
and all of a sudden find themselves in a traffic jam. But, you know, what are you going to do?
It sucks, but you know what? Let's start with the Rangers that, you know, are in a terrific place, six straight wins. And it's interesting, you know, having, you know, been at every single one of their games. They beat the Capitals like they were supposed to. And, you know, the Capitals were what they were. They were the worst playoff team, and the Rangers took care of business. Certainly, Carolina's a lot better. I don't think I'm in a bad place if I'm Carolina. I know I lost two games, and you hate doing that, but I don't think they're doing anything wrong. I just think the Rangers have caught some breaks. The special teams have been absolutely terrific. I guess Carolina could try to stay out of the box if they could, or do better on a penalty kill that was terrific during the regular season, but it's two evenly matched teams, and, you know, watching both of those games, EJ, that Carolina could be up 2-0.
Yeah, I don't disagree necessarily with that. I thought the Rangers winning game one, I think, was a little, you know, obviously you get a double overtime game where you're down in the game. I mean, that's certainly a game Carolina could have won. You're right. The special teams have been a big difference in the series. And when you came in regular season, I think the Rangers were third best power play, third best penalty killing.
Right.
I think Carolina was 2-1, maybe the best penalty killing, the second best power play. So, you know, both teams had great special teams coming in. But Carolina's special teams, and even going back to the series against the Islanders, their penalty killing, I was looking at it prior to last night's game, so it might be the worst right now. I haven't looked at the updated stats, but they were 15th out of the 16 teams.
They were.
In penalty killing. And, you know, maybe L.A. is worse because L.A. had just got pummeled by Edmonton's power play in that series. But, you know, it's funny, the series, those two series right now are similar because the LA Kings couldn't do anything on the power play and they couldn't stop the Oilers' power play. And that's what's happened to Carolina here. I mean, the Rangers are scoring on the power play, generating a lot of chances, even when they don't score, generating momentum. And Carolina's power play has their 0-10 in the series. And I thought what Roddy Brind'Amour said after the game was really true. It's like they're just on the perimeter the whole power play. So give the Rangers penalty killers a lot of credit, but also I looked at it and I said, you know, the Carolina Hurricanes, sometimes you just have to get it to the net. And that will just lead me quickly into that last goal, the winning goal for the Rangers. The puck was blocked. It went to the corner. Mika's advantage. And what a just smart play. He just whips it at the net from a bad angle. Like, I wish more guys would just, you know, just, it's a simple phrase. It might be like on my tombstone at the end of my life. Get pucks to the net.
Right.
You know, because like just that game on the perimeter of looking for the perfect shot, good luck. You know, and that's what the Carolina Hurricanes power play looks like right now. They're on the perimeter, and the Rangers have such a dynamic power play, and Carolina likes to attack on the penalty kill, and the Rangers have the skill to beat that attack. And even in a play where it's a broken play, they made a really smart play. His advantage at firing that puck to the net, and Trocheck scores. So that's been the difference right now, it seemingly, is that the Rangers' power play has been great and Carolina's has been not good.
Now, Carolina has generated a lot of shot attempts, EJ. They've also done a good job of keeping shot attempts for the Rangers away from Frederik Andersen, which seems to be a good idea because it seems like he hasn't done a good job tracking pucks in this series. Two goals where he thought he kind of had the puck, both on the Kreider and Trocheck power play goals. He gets the stop, but the puck kind of is in between his legs and leads to the two goals, the game tire and the game winner. Do you think there's a chance that Carolina switches to Kachetkov here?
Especially the way he's played against the Rangers.
I think there's a chance, you know, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think they're pretty in deep with Andersen, and I thought Andersen played pretty good last night. I mean, I thought he made a lot of big saves in the game. So, I mean, that's a question for Riley Brind'Amour. I mean, it's a swing game. It's a huge game, obviously, right? Because Carolina wins, we have a series. Carolina loses, the Rangers are in a really good situation. So, for me, I'm probably going to stay with Freddie Andersen, but we'll see what Roddy does.
Well, I'll say this. You know, the Rangers' last two series losses, they blew 2-0 series leads. And the last time these two teams played back in 2022, the Rangers, Carolina won their two games at home, and then the Rangers went to the Garden and won two games, eventually won the game in seven. So this series is not over by a long shot, for sure. But what I'm kind of curious about is, what do you do with Matt Rempe? I mean, it was a double overtime game. He played 4 minutes. He didn't play any of the third period. Didn't play any of the third period in game one because he's not going to play when the game's tied or if it's a one-goal game. So you're kind of playing shorthanded knowing every one of these games are going to be close. And I know the fans love him, and I know he's effective for sure. But if you're not going to trust him out there in a big moment, would Johnny Brodzinski be a better option? Would you maybe have this be the door that swings open for a Philip Hedel? I know you don't like to make changes when you've won, you know, six in a row in the playoffs and eight overall in a row, but does it make a lot of sense in this series to basically play 11 forwards in the third period?
Well, I don't know what Carolina's going to do with Steph Nason.
Yeah.
He played 648 in the game. I mean, like, these all teams have guys who play, you know, like, what's Dallas going to do with Nils Lundqvist? I mean, for now, for a long time. Last night he played 407. He's their sixth defenseman. He barely plays. They don't have a better option, I would imagine, in Dallas, so they would play a sixth guy. They're missing Hakanpää, and you know he would probably play more. I guess what I'm trying to get to is that, like, to your point, Don, and this has been a winning lineup, so I don't know why you would change it. But Matt Rempe, you don't know how the game's going to unfold. And, like, I saw some people talk about that last night. Rempe never got off on the bench in the third period of the overtime. Like, Peter, it's smart not to have him off the bench in those situations. Like, you're in overtime. The first goal is going to win. Like, it doesn't make sense to have him out there. But, like, you didn't know that before the game. So, for me, the lineup has been good. If the game is played in a different manner, maybe Rempe's more a factor in the game. He's obviously been talked about a lot more because of his size, his stature, his whole story. But at the end of the day, for me, like, if you put Philip Hedel in there, right, you could make an argument, yeah, if Philip Hedel's healthy, you could put him in there. But, like, now he's a player that you're going to play more than 4 minutes. Now it's going to affect a lot of other things. So for me, I didn't think really anything of it. I mean, because when the game starts, you don't know how the game's going to unfold. And so if the game unfolds in a different manner, maybe Matt Rempe is going to be more of a factor in the game. Maybe the Rangers have a big lead. Maybe the Rangers fall behind by a lot of goals, and it's a different type of game altogether. I like having him on the bench, and I think that he brings a little bit of a vibe to that team, and especially at home games. But I like having him on the bench.
EJ, what can you say about what Vincent Trocheck has done? He's now scored in five straight games, which ties a franchise record for the Rangers that hasn't happened since 1930.
Cecil Dillon.
Yeah, Cecil, the great Cecil Dillon.
The immortal.
Yes, that's right. Right up there with Messier and Grace.
You know, he was originally, Cecil Dillon was the first Rangers color commentator on radio. I don't know if you guys know that.
I didn't know that. I did not know that.
Yeah, it's not true. But
listen. You could have said. I would have believed you. You could have sat. I would have sat there and believed you.
Well, the radio rights in the late in the late 30s were HAM, ham radio. So I don't think a lot of people had it.
There was just a guy. There was just a guy screaming off the top of the building.
Before Shoot the Puck, Barry, there was. Anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, we talk about Panarin being one of the greatest Rangers free agent acquisitions ever. Vincent Trocheck, with what he's been able to do in these playoffs, he's got to be up there too, EJ. He's just as important, if not more important, on that line. And Lafreniere had two goals last night. So that line, especially with the way that Trocheck is able to win faceoffs, didn't have a great performance last night, but he has been instrumental in being that second center that the Rangers need here in a playoff series.
Wow, what a performance last night for Trocheck. I mean, he played 35 minutes, 21 seconds, right? So he played the most minutes in the game, which that's usually a defenseman that plays those kind of minutes, right? So he played 35 minutes in the game, 35-21. He had the game-winning goal. He had an assist. He had 15 shot attempts, 15 shot attempts, 6 shots on goal, 3 hits, and he took 34 faceoffs. Now, he wasn't great in the circle. He was only 38%, but he took 34 faceoffs. I mean, he took the lion's share of the faceoffs for the Rangers. I mean, I think it was Wenberg was next with 25 faceoffs. So that's a monster performance, and you guys know, you watch every game, how valuable he's been to the Rangers this year, and what a good season he's had, and he's, you know, stayed healthy, and really happy for him, because you know, he's one of those guys. I have to say, I mean, I have him pegged on a really good team as more of a third center, but he's proven to be much more than that for the Rangers. So it's been a tremendous year, and that was one of the great playoff performances last night.
Well, that's how the Rangers pegged him, because it was Hedl on that second rotation at center, and it opened the door with his injury for Trocheck to move up there, and it's just been a match made in heaven. You're so right about the defensemen usually lugging the minutes. The Rangers had 4 players play over 30 minutes. 3 of the 4 were forwards. A lot of that has to do with the power play opportunities, you know, but, you know, Panarin, Zibanejad, Trocheck, all playing over 30 minutes, and then Fox was the one defenseman with over 30. You know, pretty incredible game, very intense, and now we'll see what will happen tomorrow, shifting over to Raleigh.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of this game because most of it was already over by the time the Rangers ended. But what an amazing comeback for Colorado. And I don't know how you felt about it, guys, but, you know, I was doing the updates in the intermissions during overtime, and it was 3-0 Dallas after one. I'm like, this isn't over. This is kind of how Colorado likes to play it. And the other thing, too, I thought was, and I got to listen to it while I was stuck in traffic trying to drive home. Fortunately, not actually in the tunnel where I would have lost reception for satellite radio, is how good Georgiev was in overtime and how the ice was really tilted in Dallas's favor, but then Colorado with a 4 unanswered, and they draw first blood against Dallas.
Yeah, it was kind of a crazy game because, you know, I was watching both games. I had kind of the two screens going, and Dallas, like, it started out, Colorado started out with some really good opportunities in the game, and then Makar hit the post, and it looked like Colorado was going to just really storm out early in the game, but they didn't score. And then Suter's, like, kind of sifted one through traffic, kind of a floater went in. It was 1-0 Dallas. Then they had scored on a 5-on-3. Like, Wyatt Johnson scored off a faceoff. I mean, that kid is just unbelievable. He's not even 21 years old yet. And then they scored on a 5-on-3, and it was 3-0. And what maybe gets lost in the whole game last night was that Jamie Benn made a great play to the net with about 6 seconds left in the first period and went around Georgiev and tucked it past him. And Josh Manson got there and stopped the puck from going in. And, I mean, if it's 4-0 after one on the back of a great play by Jamie Benn, I mean, I don't know if Colorado can come back from that. So, I mean, that kind of got lost in it then in the second period. Dallas took some penalties. Nichushkin scored a power play goal. McCarr scored a power play goal, 3-2 going into the third, and then McKinnon scored early third, and you know, Colorado completes the comeback to tie. We get into the overtime, and you're right, Tony. Georgiev made a number of good saves on Johnston, on Sagan, and then the puck comes up the ice, and Miles Wood, the former Devil, who I've always been kind of a fan of. Miles Wood is a really good bottom six forward for a good team because he's big, he's strong, he's physical, he skates.
He does.
His dad was a great skater, Randy Wood, and Miles, who played in the NHL as well, and Miles is a great skater, and he just took off the ice. And you know, I got a note from a former goalie today, kind of laughing about it. He just said, they don't teach these goalies to use the poke check enough anymore, because he was coming with such speed and there was backside pressure, he would not have been able to come back to tuck the puck on his forehand. And he just felt like Ottinger just got caught in the net. And great job by Wood to kind of finish the play. But kind of a crazy comeback for the Avalanche. We'll see what it means for the Stars. It was a bad loss, certainly, for Dallas. A bad loss under any circumstance, lose a 3-0 lead on home ice in game one. But that said, Dallas lost the first two games to Vegas in the last series and went on to win that series. So it should be a classic. We'll see what happens in game two.
EJ, there's something to be said about, and I'm not taking anything away from the Stars, because it seems like their roster's composed of 35-plus contracts and then like 18, like 19-year-olds. Just kind of the way that they're kind of put together with a couple of guys, of course, that don't fit that bill. But I guess you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That the Avalanche do, in essence, have, you can make an argument, the three best players in this series. I mean, Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar, Mikko Rantanen, and I'm not even talking about Nichushkin, who has 8 goals. When you have a team like that and you're down by 3, you feel a lot more confident coming back. Like, did Colorado getting through Winnipeg the way they did and then coming off that long layoff and then seeing what happened to Florida, is that something that can carry over for them? Or in a playoff series, it really is game by game and the momentum doesn't really carry over and stuff like this?
Well, I mean, I think Colorado's got a good feeling about their group, right? I mean, to your point, Anthony, they got, you know, they have two of the best, you know, 3, 4, 5 players in the league, however you want to roll them out, right? MacKinnon and Makar. And so that's at the top. And then they also have Rantanen, and Nichushkin has become a beast. And then they've got, you know, guys sprinkled throughout their team that are really, just really good players that are in really good roles. So, and they've won. I mean, a lot, you know, several of these guys were part of a Stanley Cup championship team 2 years ago. So, you know, they have mojo on that team, and they can turn the dial up really high. And that's the thing about playing the Colorado Avalanche, is can you manage the pace against that team? Can you play in that pace when it gets frenetic? Can you do that? And you know, that's the thing that separates Colorado really from me for everybody else in the league. They play at a higher tempo than anyone else, and that was the question I had moving into the series, was can Dallas manage the pace, particularly with, as I mentioned earlier, talking about depth on your team. They play 5D. So we'll see where it goes. Dallas surprised me in the last round with their ability to bounce back, and they played so well. When they got to Vegas, they really, I thought, played really extremely well. This is a different challenge, and, you know, matchup styles make the fight, and, you know, they're playing Colorado now, not Vegas. And Colorado, as I said, they have that high-octane offense, and they play at that pace. We'll see if Dallas is able to figure out a way to offset it. I mean, they were good early in the game, but, you know, they weren't able to sustain that. So we'll see what happens in game two. But Colorado is, they're a handful right now. There's no question.
Anything from game one, EJ, that would concern you about the Panthers?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you lose on home ice in game one. It's not a great thing. And they got beaten pretty handily. And now it's 5 games that these two teams have played this year, and Boston has won all 5. So it doesn't matter whether I think Florida's better or whether that, you know, the games were close. You know, that is something to have in your back pocket. You've beaten that team 5 times this year. Now, the pressure was on Florida tonight. They've got to have a better effort. Right now, we know, like, they were off a week. Boston came in with a lot of momentum. But Boston's got the thing that is the most valuable thing in the playoffs. They've got the hot goalie. And Swayman is playing really well. and that team is, you know, they've always played with a certain structure and a feeling within their group that they're always going to find ways to win games, even though I don't think when you look at their roster, it's of the eight teams left, when you just go through the roster, it may be the eighth best. But yet here they are up one game to none. It's a long series. I would expect Florida to find a way to win tonight and kind of create a series that maybe is a little longer than I thought it was going to be. But I can't overlook the fact that the Bruins have beaten them five times now. I mean,
right.
and they did beat them pretty handily in game number one, and the roles are reversed this year, right, guys? I mean, the Florida Panthers are the heavy favorite for most of us who watch hockey all year long, and the Bruins are more of the underdog. And it seems like the Bruins are going to really enjoy being in that role, and there's a lot of pressure on Florida to win tonight.
What do you expect, EJ, from Oilers Canucks? Now, I thought that the Predators were going to win the series when Demko was healthy. We still don't have a clear picture on him. When we don't have a clear picture, it usually tends to mean to me that we're probably not going to see him. This Oilers team is one of the best offenses left in the game, and it seems like they did a pretty good job of handling their business in the first round. They're in Vancouver tonight. Do you see the Oilers taking game one? They're favored, but do you see them taking game one?
Well, I'll be really interested to see how this plays out. I mean, both teams have had some rest because of the scheduling here, right? So, I think Vancouver played on Friday. Edmonton played prior to that, so both teams have had some time off. Vancouver, you know, the pressure on the whole team on home ice to win that first game is always a little bit more. I expect it to be a closer series than people think. I think the key will be, can Vancouver, on the penalty kill, can Vancouver, you know, keep the Oilers' wolves at bay, so to speak, because the LA couldn't do it. You know, I mean, it would. Edmonton was 9-for-20 on the power play, and really they were 11-for-20. And I didn't even check the other ones because there were games where they scored a power play goal seconds after a power play ended. So to me, those still are kind of, you know, they're still kind of in that power play window. That's going to be the thing. And then you got Shelof, who looks like he's the guy right now. They also have Casey DeSmith, but Shelof is an interesting story because he's a young goalie. He's got a little bit of swagger. He was a high prospect in the Canucks system. And, you know, he played in that bronze medal game for Latvia last year against Team USA at the World Championships. And it was an historic win for Latvia. They won in overtime. Oddly enough, Casey DeSmith was in goal for Team USA. But Latvia won that game in overtime, and it set off a celebration that might still be going on in some parts of Latvia a year later. And I always look at it as, like, that guy is never going to play in a bigger game than that, ever, in his life, because that was such a huge moment for his country. So, yeah, playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs is high pressure. And, you know, if they get to a game seven, it's high pressure. But this kid has already proven in a big spot. You know, he doesn't kind of shrink. So we'll see how he starts off in the series. You know, Edmonton, they do have some weaknesses that you can exploit. Vancouver's got a good lineup. I'll be curious to see where it goes. I mean, the path is there for the Oilers, right?
True.
We've talked about it many times. The path is there for them. But I think, you know, Vancouver, we might be underestimating a little bit how dangerous they can be in the series. Because after all, I agreed with you, Anthony. I thought that Nashville was going to beat them. And the Canucks found ways to win, even with three different goalies. So I'll be curious to see how this one starts tonight.
And the reason Edmonton didn't win this division is because they couldn't beat Vancouver in the regular season. Now, two of those meetings were very early in the year. Much like the Boston-Florida matchup, you still got to feel good if you're Vancouver taking on an Edmonton team that's the favorite, but you haven't lost to them this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit of a card you have in your back pocket. And, like, the thing is, Boston was able to add on to that in their first game. And, you know, went on the road, so even bigger for the Bruins. Let's see if Vancouver can do that tonight. Because if Vancouver gets a win in game one and starts to feel good about their team, I mean, in that room, they're like, hey, what are we worried about the Oilers for? We can deal with them. We can beat them. We beat them every time we played them. Or, you know, we feel good about playing
right.
them.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, it's a different challenge now. The Oilers have been terrific, you know, going back to, like, what was it, the middle of November to where we are today. I mean, they'll probably have the best record in the league from a certain point in time to the end of the season, but it's going to be a different challenge. But I do think the games will be closer than people think. Again, the key will be, don't, you know, taking penalties And if you take him, can you kill him? Because Edmonton has been, you know, like the Rangers, they've been a monster on the power play.
Well, I got news for you. If the games are closer, I think advantage Vancouver, because I think they were able to exploit, not even exploit, but while the Predators were a great story, we knew that their top line scoring was good, but they didn't really have the depth. Edmonton, of course, has world-class talent on offense, and if they can't take over this series, I think it benefits a Vancouver team that, yes, they don't have Demko, but all their guys are healthy too, and they could put up goals just as good as Edmonton can. So I think that would be a huge advantage to Vancouver.
Yeah, I think the Canucks have a pretty well-defined team, you know, and by that I mean they've got first-liners in first-line roles, second-liners, third-liners, fourth-liners. They got, you know, they can play four lines. They get a lot out of, you know, the Dakota Joshuas and the Connor Garlands and, you know, Teddy Blugers. And so, you know, and they've got Hampus Lindholm playing, the other Lindholm, I'm getting them confused there from the one in Boston, but he's playing on the third line. And he, Elias Lindholm, yeah, thank you. He's been playing, you know, on a third line role, and I thought he had a good first round series. Had a big overtime game winning goal in game four. So, you know, it'll be interesting to watch. I mean, like I said, you know, Edmonton kind of rolled through LA, and so we're curious to see if this is a little bit better challenge for him. But again, maybe Edmonton is really good right now and playing well, and maybe they can get through Vancouver in five or six games, and now they're sitting really in a great spot to take on whoever comes out of Dallas and Colorado. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think you're right. I think Vancouver's got to set the tempo here early in the series and send a message that, you know, they're going to be right here till the end.
All right, just before we let you go, your thoughts on Travis Green to Ottawa.
I was a little surprised. I mean, Travis is, you know, he's coached in Vancouver. I thought he had some success there. I mean, it was, you know, kind of a weird success he had there because, the playoff series, I think the goalie played very well. You know, they had Markstrom, and then he had Demko, a young Demko there, and I think that goes back to the bubble playoffs, and I think that, you know, they had some success, but the goalies were the big disarray. I can remember in a seven-game series they lost to Vegas, I think the shots in the games were like 50-15 in some of the games, if my memory serves me correctly. But so he had some success there. It didn't end well. He came in. He was with New Jersey. He jumped in as the interim coach at the end of the year. I thought Ottawa wanted to take a bigger swing, quite frankly. I think Ottawa missed the boat when they didn't hire Patrick Waugh when he was available. I think just in that region, that would have been a really big swing. I think that, you know, Steve Staios is connected to Newport Sports, management group there with Donnie Meehan and Pat Morris. And I know Travis Green is very well connected with them as well. So you just never know the behind the scenes who's connected to who, right? But anyway, listen, Travis is he's had coaching experience, so he can come into the job having, you know, and he just coached this at the end of last year with New Jersey, so he's familiar with the conference. And, you know, we'll see. They've got a lot of really good young players there. I mean, they've got to figure out the goal.
They've
got to sort through some of the roster. But I really like what they have. I just, you know, again, I don't mean to knock on Travis Green because maybe he'll do an outstanding job. I just felt like, you know, there were bigger fish out there, and I thought they wanted to make a bigger splash with a new ownership group. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But that was my reaction when it was just, I thought it was going to be I thought they would make a bigger play.
Just interesting that the two individuals that coached the Devils last year have jobs and the Devils haven't found their replacement yet.
Well, I think the Devils are looking to make a bigger play, right?
Yeah.
They're trying to get it on Craig Berube. They're trying to, you know, I'd imagine some other, you know, bigger names out there. We don't really know exactly what's happening with Sheldon Keefe in Toronto, and that could end up impacting what goes on with Mike Sullivan in Pittsburgh. And I know that there was an interest, you know, there was the rumor about them wanting to talk to Sullivan. I'm sure, you know, that Tommy Fitzgerald has a relationship with Mike Sullivan that probably goes back a long time. They did, you know, they had a connection and, you know, going back to probably, you know, their youth. So, you know, I think that's where the Devils are at. They're kind of waiting to see how some of this sorts out and make a decision from there. But, you know, again, that's what I thought Ottawa was going to do, was to try to, you know. And the same with Buffalo, you know. I thought Buffalo could have been in that position. There's so many coaches kind of swirling right now. I think a lot of people are waiting to see what happens with Berube, but I do think that Sheldon Keefe part of this is another factor because who knows if that impacts what happens in Pittsburgh, because obviously Keefe is connected to Kyle Dubas. So the coaching carousel will be spinning again.
Sure. Well, listen, buddy, enjoy it. We'll hopefully get you on Monday. We'll get deeper into the second round. Right. Enjoy it. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have fun. Are you going to Raleigh?
I'm not going to Raleigh. I'll be in the studio.
Oh, that's not right. Not right.
I do like Raleigh. It's a great building.
I know. I know you're like, we even spent time in Raleigh years ago.
Years ago.
Years
back
ago.
And forth.
All right.
Edmonton, Raleigh. There's not too many direct flights, but that we got through it in 06. So.
We got through it. All right. Anthony, have a good one.
Take care, buddy.
All right. We'll see you guys.
All right. That is the great E.J. Raddick. He joins us every Monday, but we had him on Wednesday today. So, Anthony, we do have a couple of games tonight. Game 2 between the Panthers and the Bruins. Boston leads that series 1-0 as they continue that series in Sunrise. And then we will have, finally, Vancouver and Edmonton from the Pacific Northwest, their game 1 at 10 o'clock tonight. So, a 7:30, a 10. As we're rolling along, as we get multiple games now the rest of the way. So, looking forward to that.
It's a good time. It's a good time to be a hockey fan.
Yeah.
Your team is still in it. It's very stressful, but still fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really curious to see how the Oilers-Canucks series looks. And I'm quite frankly curious to see how the Panthers respond, because that was a punch in the mouth they took against Boston at home. So I'm very curious to see how that all plays out.
Should be a lot of fun. We'll be back with you again on Friday. That's when we'll do a lot of the social media then. So if you want to get in touch with us, at Don LaGreca, at Anthony Pusick, make sure you put in the hashtag Game Misconduct. We'll be back with you again on Friday. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.